So, yeah, in high school, I was a very mediocre goalkeeper on a very mediocre high school team. I was the kind of player that I think someone would look at him and say, you know, if he was in any way athletic, he might be pretty good at this. Once I graduated from high school, whenever I had a chance to play, I normally tried to put myself out in the field, get a chance to run around, you know, put myself in shape. And then our regular goalkeeper, Zach Adams, shout out, did an amazing job while he was in there. His first time ever playing soccer was our first game in goal. And he's done the best he could. We're a completely outmatched team. So he hurt his foot, is going to be out for a couple of months. And I decided to fill in and realized that I was getting would have gotten all the exercise I wanted had I just played in goal.
I'm assuming you had a clean sheet. Is that accurate?
I didn't have clean anything by the end of that match. So the part that was really funny is, you know, we still lost by double digits, but everyone was so impressed with my 25 saves versus 10 goals that I surrendered.
So ignoring the 10 goals, you basically, it was like a flashback to the U.S. men's national team in the World Cup. You got your inner Tim Howard.
Very similar to my high school career, where I would make 20 saves, give up 3 goals, and we would lose 3-0. But what was even funnier to me is if you remember at the beginning of Space Jam, when Michael Jordan strikes out and he gets to the dugout and everyone talks to him about what a wonderful job he did striking out. That's pretty much how I felt on Thursday after the game Wednesday night.
Soccer chat with two T's because we're going to chat about soccer, but we're also in Chattanooga, so it's like a play on words. And you know, Chattanooga is a soccer city.
All right, welcome to episode 13 of the Soccer Chat, brought to you by Roughneck Scars and Golden Goal Press. All right, Alex, so everyone that's listening to this is going to assume that all we're going to bring is praise to the Red Wolves for their amazing play that they've had for the last, you know, 4 road games as well as this most recent home game. Obviously, we're super excited, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a low point.
I want to say this, and this is why I said it in that manner. One of the things that I have been somewhat vocal about is it's really important in my mind for podcasts like ours, for journalists in general, to not be afraid to be critical of the team. But there's a difference between critical and rude. And so I don't want to go down the line of ripping on every player or ripping on every coach, but we are going to talk about the ineptitude that they've had on the road. And I think that that's important for us to bring up. So I think what we're going to talk about a little bit here is obviously we're going to talk about the Tormenta 2 game. We're going to talk about the 4 game this weekend. But for those of you that are tuning in and expecting us to sugarcoat anything, I'm not good at sugarcoating, so at some point I might get super negative and Alex is going to have to pull me off the deep end. But let's be honest, this team looks predictable and is really, really bad on the road.
Yeah, they've got some things they need to figure out. I will say, coming home, my son had a makeup game from a rainout. So we went Tuesday night, we played our makeup game. We didn't get home till about 8:45. So we had missed pretty much the entire first half. We knew that we were not going to be able to avoid spoilers, all that. ESPN Plus, you know, you can't record the game necessarily. So we knew we were just going to kind of pick up in the middle. We saw the score was not good. We heard that basically they were zombies in the first half. And, you know, that's what it feels like a lot on the road. That takes me back to traveling out to Greenville, watching that game. They just felt very lifeless out there during the match.
I think, and I also think they were caught. I think they bought into the Tormenta 2 has only played together for 3 or 4 days. It's going to be a walk in the park. And I think they forgot these are young, hungry players that are trying to prove themselves. They are players that were selected by one of the top formerly PDL teams around that went undefeated in their region last year. These weren't scrubs coming off of an NAIA school. These were quality players that probably have a future in professional soccer. So I think they overestimated the quality they were going to go against. I think that was a big part of it. But at some point, they should have picked it up, right?
Right.
I personally, I watched most of the game. I also had a similar situation to you in that I didn't get to start at the very beginning on time, but I did the classic, like, block where the score would be, put it on mute and rewind so I could watch the game from the very beginning. But it was disheartening. The first goal that was disallowed was a goal. They were definitely onsides. And so it really should have been 4-0. It was ugly. But that wasn't the only ugly. I mean, this is we should have beaten Orlando City. We should have played a lot better versus Richmond. Like, it's been pretty consistent. North Texas, we gave goals away. Like, this is becoming who we are on the road. And I haven't seen signs of that changing at any of these games. I expected that Tormenta 2 game to be that 3-0, 4-0 blowout win that kind of kickstarted them on the road. And man, I was disappointed.
Yeah, that is true. I felt like in the second half, they came out with some more energy off the kickoff. And then they had situations where they really had issues on the back line with the counterattack and got flat out beat. And that's how they gave up those two goals that caused me to pack everything in. I had had a long day and was very tired, and I just went ahead and headed off to bed after that third goal got scored.
Yeah, and I can't really blame you for that. It was ugly, and I think everybody recognizes that. Now, I do want to point out something that's not accurate that's going around there. We beat Tormenta 1, so it's not like we're going to be outmanned by every team we played. Tormenta 2 played well. I'm very intrigued as to how their game goes tomorrow night, in that they will be facing Nashville, who, honestly, and I said this to you and I said this to a few others, I think we would have extended our life all of 1 week, because I think Nashville would have beaten us pretty handily as well, especially consider that would have been on the road too, even though Nashville's somewhat on the road themselves in that they're not even playing where Nashville plays. But, you know, I still would have liked to play that game this week. So,
for sure.
Yeah, it was disappointing. Now, let's move on from that. I think everybody knows it was disappointing. I don't think you could say anything more than it was disappointing. We stink on the road. We came home, and I've rewatched a lot of that game because, once again, the positioning of where the supporters sit, half the game gets played where you really don't have angles on such. And after rewatching it, I think we were really unlucky that we didn't walk away with a win there.
Yeah, same thing in rewatching it. I feel like other than about 5 minutes in the second half where everyone just kind of went spastic, that's a 2-0 win walking away.
Yeah.
And that's a bummer because there was that 5 minutes in there. And I do want to give credit to Josel Nunez for Forward Madison. The second goal, he legitimately earned that. He worked his way, you know, through the defense, had a shot blocked, followed it, got the rebound, and was able to put it away. I was pretty impressed by his skill on that goal.
Yeah. Watching it from where we sat on the first goal they had, I thought they had scored the goal. I didn't realize it was an own goal that miraculously hit the post and perfectly ricocheted down on Zagiro's head.
Yes.
I mean, that was as fluky can get. So that's what I mean by I think we got really unlucky. I mean, that ball could have bounced any different direction, and that's not a goal for them. Because even as badly as position as our goalie Mengels was, he got back in position for the rebound off that ball that would have come out if it hadn't hit Zagiro. So
that's very true.
It's just, in my mind, it was just really bad luck on that. That said, where was he going? Like, I've rewatched it so many times. I'm like, where are you going, Alex? I jokingly said, I sent the video to my brother, and I said, did I ever make this bad of a play when I play keeper? And his response was perfect. Adam, you would have never left your goal because you would have never gotten back. You were too slow.
To be fair, I think last Wednesday I had at least two plays that were like that. So,
yeah. I'm still at a loss as to where he was going, because we had a defender in the area, so it wasn't like he was the last resort.
defender in the area, the guy was going away from goal. Yeah, it was very, very disappointing. Had you scratching your head. And I think it kind of created the funk. They were flat off that kickoff, and that's why the goal came 2 minutes later.
And in Patrick McCoon's article on the Times Free Press, he had interviewed Tim Hankinson, and Hankinson mentioned, like, we've got to do better at rebounding from a bad situation. And he was directly referencing that, basically saying that is unacceptable to not be up for the game as soon as a goal happens. Because that's going to happen. Now, a fluke cross that accidentally hits the post and perfectly bounces off and hits your defender, that's not happening every day. But you getting scored on in a bad situation, that's going to happen frequently throughout the season. You're going to have a bad back pass. You're going to have something that happens that's going to be like, man, this sucks. You gotta bounce back better than that. Now, they did bounce back pretty quick from that second goal. And I think that's the first goal that's actually been scored near the supporter section.
Yes.
All season. A little disappointing that the rain in Chattanooga was really bad all day before and the day of, to the point where thunderstorms were predicted at 90% level for the majority of the week and going in. So there wasn't a massive fan turnout. In fact, even Nashville and CFC's game was canceled because of those raining conditions. So there wasn't huge fan turnout, so they didn't get that massive, you know, supporter section going crazy from the first goal they get to see up front. But it was a nice goal. It was really, you know, Zaire was in the right spot. It was a perfectly executed follow-up. I mean, he's right where he's supposed to be. It was a really enjoyable game to watch from that instant.
It also, I think it worked out that the crowd wasn't there to go crazy because he did get kicked in the head in scoring the goal. So he wasn't able to come celebrate and wave at us. He was, you know, trying to make sure that he wasn't concussed. And so I think it all worked out for the best. Both goals, I want to give props. I really feel like this last game, Tony Walls and Vangel Zaguro were probably the two best players. Both goals started with crosses coming from either of them on their side, getting to the end line and then being crossed back. So Josue Soto chased one to the line, sent it back across, that allowed Connor Doyle to put a head on it for his first. I got a chance to just tell him congratulations after the game, and you could hear the relief in his voice as he was talking about getting that first goal of the season. And then Vangels came across to Stephen Beatty, who put it back in to the middle for Zide to finish off, and that was a great finish. To stick his head in there with someone's foot coming up, it took some bravery. I appreciate that.
So I'm going to slightly sidetrack us just for a second. I don't know if you saw this, but the USL announced that they are going to have additional substitution for concussion-related injuries, which honestly, I think that would have been one of those situations where you might have even utilized something like that. I don't know if you saw that announcement today or not.
I did. It's so common sense. You're almost amazed that it's been being put into practice, but.
Well, and it's something you expect to be something that will become more commonplace as well, right? Because we're in a situation, you look at some sport like, say, American football, where they just ignored the issue for so long that it's become this stigma for them. Get out ahead of it. You know, headers, kicks to the face, landing awkwardly on your neck, all those things can cause concussions, and it's something that you have to have something in place, and I think it's to be commended the USL is taking that step.
Yeah, and soccer is so unique in that substitutions, once you take a player off the field, you're not allowed to put them back on. You lose one of that small number of substitutions. I've been talking about that with my son a lot. He's 8, and he's trying to wrap his mind around the fact that, the Chattanooga Red Wolves only get to make 3 substitutions the entire game. And I'm trying to explain to him, well, it challenges you to manage the energy that you're using in the game, and it makes the coach have to strategize about where he's making his replacements. So it really tests you at a higher level. But when you're dealing with something as serious as a concussion, some kind of brain injury, you really need to, you know, there needs to be added things that go along with that. And that's what I think they're doing here, and it's going to be good.
Yeah, they're referring to it as a head injury substitution. So it's not considered a full substitution. It allows them to go through the full concussion protocol and then have another player on the field during that time. when the player's taken off, medical staff are put into kind of an awkward situation right now because they do come off the field when there's a head injury, but that player's like, get me back out. They can be back out there. Get me back out there. Oh, yeah. And the coach is yelling the same thing. This will take that away. So I think that's huge and very important. So, I know I took a sidetrack there, but I thought it's the perfect time to mention that. All right, so one more thing, follow up on the game that we had. Looking at the table and where that puts us, have you taken a look at that? And when I talk table, I'm talking about the one that's done by Ira Jersey, where it's points per game. I think that's by far still, with how uneven our schedules are on the amount of games played and such, that's the best look. Have you looked at that at all?
Yeah, I did see that this afternoon. It's a little disappointing. There is some work to do, some things that we need to get in order to put ourselves in a better position on that table.
Yeah, it's as disappointing as it is, there's still, I think, some good that we can look at it. So I'm pulling it up here. We are at 1.14, which is second worst. But it's also, another way to look at it is that we are currently tied for seventh and only 0.03 behind Tucson, who we take on and we'll be previewing later on in the podcast. We take on Saturday. Now, they've got a game in hand on us, but that said, we can really kind of look at what we've got going forward. A lot of the teams that are above us, we still have a lot of games with. We have a lot of ownership still. It's still early. It's still taking a lot for me to fully grasp that seven games in is still early. I've still got that CFC MPSL mindset that, holy crap, we're in trouble. We're seven games in. That's not really the case anymore, but, 1.14 won't do it. We're going to stay at the bottom of the table if we keep that up, so. Just wanted to mention that. I really do like what Ira does with that. It totally does. It totally puts it in perspective. It also freaks you out a little bit looking at North Texas, five games in, five wins in. That's pretty good. Their goal differential is plus +7.
Yeah, and I mean, they've been pepulous for the last three games as he's been with the U-17 national team. So look out for North Texas.
Now, that said, here's who we've played so far. We played forward twice. We've played North Texas, we've played Tormenta, we've played the Kickers, and we've played OCB. Of those teams, only OCB is below us. North Texas is in first, Tormenta's in second, the Kickers are in third, forwards in fifth on this listing. Now, is that because they're playing us that they're up there, or is it because they really are the better teams? If that's the case, we can move up real quick when we get to play the Lights of Tucson and the Ignite. And I guess we have played Greenville. I missed that one. But Greenville, again, they're tied with us. So we've got opportunity to continue to move up just off of who we have and have not played.
Sure. Well, including, Tormenta there is sitting there with one loss, and that one loss is to us. So,
yeah. So I'm not counting us out by any stretch of the imagination. All right. So let's go ahead and go to the second topic that I discussed I wanted to go over. And that has a lot to do with what we've talked about kind of here or there throughout our various other podcasts. And that's a little bit about the formation that we use as well as the player selection. I think you and I have both at various times talked about how we feel like the player selection is not exactly what we would expect to a point. Me personally, I would like to see a different lineup in general as well. So what I've challenged you to do was to come up with a lineup suggestion, players, formation and such, and then kind of defend it. And if you don't mind, I wouldn't mind for you to start, just so I can get an idea of what you're doing and see how different we are.
Is Cam Vickers eligible for this?
Oh, man, I wish. But I think he's still playing on his MPSL team.
My other question is, Richard, do I want to include Richard Dixon, who's out for the next couple months? He's in rehab. Speedy recovery, Richard.
Oh, and I want to tell you, I talked to him at the game. He's doing well. He said surgery went well. He did say that he's about 2 weeks out from getting the boot off where he can start doing a full rehab. He said they're still looking at 3 months is where he's at, but he won't know more until that boot's off. So that gives you a quick update on him injury-wise.
My idea was for a bunch of people in the supporter section to wear boots, and we can just be the Richard Dixon fan club.
I'm already well on the way since I've got the broken foot.
So I'm willing to stick with Alex Mangles in goal. Doing a little research, I saw he actually is leading League One in saves. I've been, I, there's very few course, this Saturday there was one, but there are very few goals that I would really blame on him in what's been conceded by the Red Wolves so far. I think he's done a very good job. I was surprised not to see Will Dietrich get an opportunity in that game against Tormenta 2, but I still, in my lineup, would stick with Alex Mangles in goal.
I've got the same on mine. So I didn't expect either of us to stray from that. I would love to hear that we had more of a competition if Hartley was to come back, make it over. I know that there's been rumors left and right about what's taking him, and I'm not going to go into those rumors, but if he does make it here, I'm not going to lie. The CFC fan in me that watched him play would really like to see him in there, just because he's really just fun to watch. But Alex has done a great job, and I think it wouldn't just be a foregone conclusion that Hartley would step in. I think Alex has earned that number one keeper, and Hartley would have to unseat him. So, yeah, I'm in the same boat as you.
My back line would have Vangel on the left, Tony Walls and Leo Falla in the center, and Andrew Mullen on the right. Basically placeholder, I want Richard Dixon on the right side, but fate won't allow that at the moment. I will say I was very impressed with the game turned in by Colin Falvey in the central defense this last Saturday, but I don't know that he is one that's going to be available all season.
Yeah, I was really surprised with the fact that, first off, that he started and then he played the whole game. I have been, you know, we joked around about starting a chant, "We want Falvey," a while back.
Yes.
And I wouldn't, I would have enjoyed doing that if he wasn't actually starting. But no, I mean, I think he played well, but at the same time, when I set my lineup, so I'm going to give you my back four as well, it's exactly the same. I got Zaguro, Leo Falla, Tony Walls, and I've got Mullen on the right. The reason I have Mullen on the right is because I want Richard Dixon to be slotted right back in there without having to adjust the rest of my lineup. I think we're going to start differing when we get further up the pitch.
Okay, so this is one of the things that we've talked a lot about changing, and I agree. I would like to see four midfielders. For me, I would say Josue Soto on the left, Walefi playing a defensive mid, Cito Seon on the right, and Steven Beede as the center attacking mid.
So we're finally differing. I've got it as a diamond, with Soto on the left and Walefi in the back, Steven Beede at the top. But on the right, I've got Caparelli. I really like what he brings, not only to the offense, but also to the defense. I really think he has shown a hustle that we need in the midfield. So I want to get him in the game, and that's where I would put him.
We're not going to have a lot of Skip Bayless, Stephen A. energy with this, because I'm not mad at you for picking Caparelli. The one thing I would say is he's played primarily on the left. I believe he's left-footed. So, and I don't think it's a hard thing to switch him and Soto on the wings there.
So I went back and forth between putting Soto on the right and putting Caparelli on the left for the same reason, because he started at left back in the Tormenta 2 game, and yeah, he's been primarily on the left side. But during the game, he floats to the right a lot. So
right,
that's where I was like, you know what, I'm fine putting him there. He's been starting Soto on the left, so that's kind of why I went that direction.
He came in for Leo Fall in the second half this Saturday and played on the right side. They shifted Tony into the center when that substitution was made.
Yeah. And then up top, who do you got on your top?
Up top, I would say Connor Doyle and Eamon Zaid. Connor, I think, is, you know, he's nice, tall, strong, plays forward. I think he could work as kind of a target guy for Zaid to play off of. I believe with his experience prior to coming to the Chattanooga Red Wolves, I would put him there before someone like Juan Mare.
Well, so I struggled with this because I feel like Doyle has disappeared in a lot of games. And I ended up putting him in, but I went back and forth between Cito Cioni and Doyle. I think both of us having Eamon Zaid up top was a no-brainer, but I went back and forth. I ultimately went with Doyle for the very thing you're talking about. But, I mean, Cito is a 30-year-old guy. It's not like he's, this you know, young guy who's got to learn the game. He knows this game as well, but ultimately I went with Connor because I think Connor just has a little bit more talent that he doesn't really, he's just not tapping into. And so I would like to still give him a chance. I think as a top two, it becomes a little bit more clear what his job is. I think when he gets out on that wing, he just kind of disappears at times. So,
yeah, I think there's just a little confusion among the midfield about where they need to be. And, you know, I think that's part of why we talk about switching to that 4-4-2. It at least allows people to know where on the field they need to be. One of the most frustrating things that I've seen all season, a lot of chances that have gone begging because that initial cross comes and there's no one at the back post to send it back in. And, you know, multiple times that I saw it in this last game, even though twice they were able to get there and put it back in and get goals off of it.
Yeah. Oh no, I think we 100% agree on that. Now here's the question. Do you think our coach, who has 40 years of experience, would change his lineup at any point this season? Or do you think he's going to stick with his 4-3-3?
There was a brief period in the second half that they were playing a 4-4-2. I don't think, being 40 years experienced, I don't think he's as wedded to the system as a lot of people might like to peg him. He's seen how the game has changed in the 40 years that he's been in it here in the United States. So I don't think he would be afraid to say, you know what, this game, we're going to go with a 4-4-2. I think really what he wants is he's wanted to give it a good 7-8 games and get real data on what's happening before he starts to make a lot of changes.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
But I have like a 20-game win streak on FIFA on the amateur level. And so I feel like I've got a pretty good handle on some things that we can do to improve this team.
Yeah. So one of the things, as you know, as you're very aware, I am an Arsenal fan, and I haven't hidden that on this podcast.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that is my EPL team.
I don't feel like you talk about it enough.
Right. I'm not freaking out about the fact that we've struggled the last few 4 or 5 games, because Arsenal just finished 5th. They're in the Europa League final, and our last 5 games in the Premier League were ugly. Like, we just struggled against teams we should never struggle against. So I think there's something to be said that you can just go through a bad spell, and maybe the coach is saying, in practice they look great, they're just not performing on the field, so he's not switching up because of that. There's stuff we don't see. And that's what Emery kept saying for Arsenal. He kept saying stuff like, you know, I'm still confident in this team. They're still producing like I want them to in practice. It'll start showing on the field. It seems to only show in the Europa League, but whatever. That's kind of where I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, hey, I've seen both. I don't want a coach that switches constantly. Emery somewhat drives me crazy because of that. So I'm okay with it. But at the same time, if we're here, you know, a month and a half from now, we're still talking about the fact that he hasn't tried a different formation and we're still not getting the ball from the midfield to the front, then I'm going to be a little bit harsher.
Yeah, and I, like I said, other than that, you know, 5-minute manic spell, and there was a period of about 10 minutes in the first half where they were sunk in and having to defend for their lives, and it took a while for them to finally regain possession of the ball. But there were large periods of time where they had the ball in the attacking half. They were trying to create chances. They were possessing the ball and passing it. They connected on 2 goals in the game. So I feel like, you know, results what they are. I'm disappointed that we came away with a draw instead of a win. You know, we have a lot of juice about wanting to beat Madison. But I'm willing to live with those results if that's the kind of game that I get to see. That was an entertaining game to watch.
No, it was.
So if we can play that kind of level, chances will be more plentiful and they will start to fall in the back of the net. They've had so many games where they couldn't create the chances, and then those ones that they missed felt so vital.
Yeah.
If they can keep like they had against Madison, if they can do that on the road against Tucson, then that'll be good.
All right, so let's go ahead and go to that. Talking about the road against Tucson, have you done much or gotten a chance to look at much of Tucson's games and how that's played out?
I've not had a chance to watch a lot of Tucson since I watched the first game they played against Orlando City B. they were a much better team than Orlando City B on that particular evening. I did do some studying of their stats thanks to USLLeague1.com. There's a lot of in-depth, really cool stats there. You should definitely head to the league website and check that stuff out. They look like they're really in a much similar boat as we are. They're part of that mix. They beat Lansing at home. They lost to Richmond on the road this last weekend. They have two losses to Tormenta. So they're 1-1-1 in the three games they've played at home.
So they're an interesting team in that they're the only B team for a USL championship team, like,
right,
that exists at all, right? Like, legitimate B team. I mean, there's some, like, Tormenta has Tormenta 2, that's a USL League 2 team, but that's different than a true B team that can move players up and down. How do you think that affects that? Because it's not like, I mean, we talked about this a little bit, and I think some other areas have talked about it as well. It's not a massive gap between Championship and League One, from what I understand, quality-wise. At least for me watching it, it hasn't seemed like a massive gap.
No, I haven't noticed a huge gap between those Championship and League One teams. So it really maybe is feels like a thing where they're going to rotate guys that need to get some minutes. I know they've got a couple players now, I believe, that have been loaned down from Phoenix Rising. Phoenix Rising is a fun team to watch. If you are staying up late on a Saturday after watching the game, they tend to be on USL. USL After Dark is what I like to joke about. But the USL West Coast games that come on at 10:30, 11 o'clock, they're a fun team to watch.
Yeah. So the reason I brought that up and the fact that they're a B team is we've already played forward when they got loaned four players from MLS. And they got loaned a goalkeeper. They got loaned a forward. They got loaned a lot of players that had some impact that first game we played where we beat them. I expect with Tucson and Phoenix are what, a 2-hour drive from each other?
Sounds about right.
So it's highly likely you're going to see the ability for them to do some loans as well back and forth. So it's a slightly different dynamic. It's similar to what you deal with a little bit with North Texas in that and their coach mentioned this on when we interviewed him, is that they are going to be getting that loan of those players, like you said, that get less playing time necessarily. I'm looking now, I'm efforting as we speak, on whether or not Phoenix Rising has a home game or not, because I think that'll affect the quality of the player that may be there on loan.
Now, I will say, looking when I looked through stats for Tucson's team, they've got a lot of players that have 4 and 5 games, you know, 3 to 5 starts. So it looks like they've got a pretty set core that they're playing with through the regular season.
Okay. They are home versus Las Vegas on Saturday. So you could, the reason I don't know the exact, but I'm pretty sure they can make a late decision on who they loan out. So you could see a late loan there if there's some players that come in because they are only that 2-hour drive away. Also, though, on the opposite side, you could lose a player late, right? If there's in training on Thursday or Friday, a player gets injured, they may call someone up. So, you know, this team could change quickly is something to kind of keep in mind. It's a very different dynamic than the majority of the other teams deal with that are getting the loans. Like even forward, Madison, Wisconsin is not right next door to Minneapolis, Minnesota. Like they've got a bit of a drive, I think. Maybe I'm way off on that. They'll probably be closer, my luck. But
well, it's usually closer than you imagine, either closer or way farther than you imagine when you're talking geography.
Well, a flight is 1 hour and 15 minutes, so I feel like a drive is going to be a little bit longer than that. 4 hours away. So that they are the closest of any of the teams when it comes to that loaning ability, other than your North Texas or Toronto, which are literally in the same place where Orlando. So, all right. So this weekend, how important is a win in your mind?
I think it's really, really important. Are we going to be a team that gets on a run and is battling for top of the league, or are we going to be a team that is going to be scrapping to make the playoffs? is going to, I think this is a big thing. Can we win on the road?
At some point it has to happen if you're going to make that run. So I think honestly, at this point, we're getting close to that has to happen. We're getting, I don't know how else to put it, but we're getting to the point in my mind where it's going to start becoming in their heads. And I think it's already getting to that point if they don't start getting a win soon. And you're looking at, you've got this game at Tucson, and then we have two home games in a row with Greenville and Toronto, and then two pretty darn hard road games. So you get this game at Tucson, but after that, your next road games are Tormenta and Richmond. If you don't win this weekend, Tormenta and Richmond's very reasonable to say the best you can do in one of those games is a tie and hope for a win in the other. But you could be looking at the Orlando game in mid-July before you have one where you're walking in thinking, we should win this.
Right.
So that's why I feel like this Tucson game is really important. I feel like I don't want to say we should, but this is a game that, if we're going to fight for the top, this is one we should feel like it's a winnable game. I don't necessarily feel the same way about going into Tormenta, in that Tormenta has proven themselves. They're a very good team. They came back pretty hard on us up 3-0. They don't give up on themselves. Let's not discount the fact that we did lose to their 2 team in Tormenta. I think this game is huge. And I don't want to make it seem like all I'm thinking is, well, because we've lost or tied on our other road games, it makes it more important. But losing at North Texas, losing at Greenville, losing at Richmond, tying in Orlando almost feels like more of a loss than the other ones. just because, I mean, they've been bad. It is what it is. Like I know that people want to say, well, they've got all this talent, and they could, you know, any given Saturday night, they could beat somebody, but
they haven't yet.
Exactly. And they're -9 goal differential, right? So right. They're losing by an average of more than one goal per game. So, and that's including with the tie. So all that to say, I think it's time. We need a win. We need aggressiveness. It needs to change.
Yes, and we're all going to be staying up very late to watch this game. So you owe it to us to come out and try to dictate the tempo.
Yeah.
And get the early score.
And it is 10:30 at night. So I will be at home watching the game, but I will be watching the whole game. Like, I will be up late watching until whatever time that ends up being, 12:30, 1 o'clock. That said, I'm typically up late watching soccer anyways because I'm a nerd. But
touche.
One last thing I do want to mention. I'm sorry, I forgot about this. And I forgot to mention this last time, I think. The women did have their first home opener on Sunday. They won going away 4-0 after getting a 2-2 comeback tie versus Asheville on Friday. So a good start for the women's team. Really want to encourage you guys to come out and watch a game. They are lower price tickets than the men's game. So if you don't have a season pass for the women, which is $35, come out and watch a game. They are relatively inexpensive. A lot of times they're on Sunday, but they have games other days of the week as well.
Congrats, ladies.
Yeah, well done. Well done to you.
You happen to know of a good late night spot that is also family friendly. So it, you know, something that will allow, because my son will stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning if we let him. So if you know of something like that, and they might be willing to work with us, reach out to the Alphas and see if maybe we can have a late night watch party.
Yeah. I mean, and there'll be one more in Tucson in August, on August 30th. These are the only two real late night watch parties that we have. The latest game other than that is going to be like an 8 o'clock game. Tormenta and Madison are both 8 o'clock games, but everything else is either 7 or 4. So these two Tucson away games here in August 30th are going to be the only ones we got like that. All right, I think that's going to do it for us this episode. Thanks to our sponsor, Golden Goal Press, the best choice for you to get custom scarves, hats, mugs, and other items for just yourself or your organization. Check out their amazing products at a fraction of the price of other places at goldengoalpress.com. Also, thanks to Roughneck Scarves, official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. I mean, the people have been asking for it. I think it's time. I think they need to hear the lovely pipes that are coming from the supporter section there in Chattanooga on a regular basis. So, without further ado, take it away.
La, 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 la,